Game day. The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Leaf Hour Edition. Welcome aboard. We're live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360, and Sportsnet Plus. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, Jake the Snake, Schultz. Toronto Maple Leafs, Boston Bruins. Bruins coming in town for the first time.
The big bad Bruins?
Are they?
I don't know. Not really.
Not really.
Kind of the meek, medium Bruins?
Cubs.
The Cubs?
No.
Yeah.
Like Cubs now.
A couple wins mid. In a row, though. Yeah, mid is right.
They are mid, but bigger news is that Austin Matthews unavailable for tonight's contest.
Yeah. Level of surprise?
Well, Sammy probably touched on it more than we wanted to the other day. Was, is there something wrong with him? Is there a hand issue, a wrist issue where he had surgery, what, a few years ago? I can't even remember how far back it was.
Not the wrist. Did I dismiss that yesterday out of hand?
No, I don't think so.
No.
I think I just mentioned it in passing, and then we all sort of had the conversation that one of my least favorite things in sports is when a guy is underperforming.
Right.
And like, we all agreed. Hurt. We all agreed, but then maybe he actually wasn't.
Yeah. So, he had 7 shot attempts and played 22 minutes in his last game. So, you know, he was involved. He was out there. It's not like there was an event that took him off the ice, but apparently something nagging. He's had a shoulder issue in the past, too. Let's be honest. He's had a head thing in the past. Who knows?
Let's get Craig Berube's thoughts on Austin Matthews for our first Kipper's Clipper.
Well, it's day-to-day upper body right now. It's, you know, he's been fighting through it a little bit, but so obviously he's out tonight.
Okay. What's he fighting?
So last year he played 81 games. Do you remember the one game that he didn't play? Yeah. He didn't play against the Pittsburgh Penguins in December, and the Leafs won 7-0. Martin Jones had a shutout. Tyler Bertuzzi had 3 assists. Max Domi had a 3-point night.
Matthew Nyes had a Gordie Howe hat trick in that game.
Yeah, was that that game?
Yeah, beat the crap out of somebody on Pittsburgh, and then he scored. Beautiful backhand.
He was flying.
Backhand goal. So, remember that, but I don't remember my email password.
I get it's early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
I get that he's not off to the best start. If there's something nagging him, look after it.
Yeah.
But I just wish it wasn't against the Boston Bruins.
Yeah.
I actually kind of like it.
You like it?
Why do you like it?
I like it. It's a, you know, it's an early season game. Ultimately, it's not meaningless because it's a tight division and they need to get these points. And like we've mentioned that, but this is a big moment for guys to have to rise to the occasion. Like it's all these guys underneath that we've been talking about, their lack of contribution. Domi hasn't scored yet. You know,
top
like
line tonight. Top line tonight. Marner.
Nick Robertson has only scored one goal all year in a blowout. Bobby McMahon's been up and down. Like, I just, more guys are going to feel a little bit more emboldened than they will in other games. And it's a big test on home ice against, like you said, the big bad Cubs or Bruins or whatever you want to call them. It's a wake up call for some guys here. And I think it's going to be fun tonight. I think it's actually kind of good.
It is.
If it's not serious.
No, they play well.
If the injury's
in these
not serious,
spots,
then
right?
It's like the season's over. But if he's just got a sore shoulder or something, then maybe it's okay.
No? And if they if they lose 4-1 today, then
they didn't have Austin Matthews.
You're covered.
Boom. That teams do that with their starting goalies, right? They're like, we're just gonna play our backup, and if we lose, we didn't play our starter. Can't blame us.
Perfect.
Yeah. No, the guys do tend to be like, all right, well, can't be a passenger tonight. We're gonna have to play.
All right, let's get Craig Berube's thoughts on playing without Austin and if they're as casual as our Sammies.
Everybody just needs to, you know, just do their job out there. I don't think you focus on, well, Austin's not playing, so what are we going to do? I mean, we got a good team. We got good players, and people are going to get a little different look tonight in situations, lines, things like that. So they're capable guys. They're good players, and, you know, you just got to go play. We understand who we're playing here tonight with Boston and how we got to play the game, and it's going to be a hard game. You know, we know that. Boston's won a couple in a row now, so they're feeling good about themselves, and they're playing better.
Agree that, especially a guy like Max Domi, that this is his specialty. He's the first guy in line to be that guy that can move up the lineup and hold a spot, whether or not you believe that he could hold it for a whole season, is much different from this type of scenario. This is why you sign Max Domi, because he can move up and down the lineup when needed.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go in, coach. Just give me a chance.
I'm telling you, if they're really good tonight, I'm going to have a meltdown. Like, I'm going to have a really hard time if Marner and him once again click and they're a fantastic line and they haven't given this a chance before. You guys know I've been on this, like, let's just see Domi with Matthews and Marner. I think they played together. Every time it feels like those guys play together, they play well.
And then, I'm sorry, once you get what you want, where does Austin come back to?
I would love for Austin to have his own line.
Okay. Share that with me.
Yeah, great. I would love for him to play with a couple of guys like Bobby McMahon and Matthew Nyes, or Bobby McMahon and... I think he can drive his own line the same way that Sidney Crosby drives his own line, the same way that McDavid at times does.
So Nyes is not with Domi or Marner?
Well, if you want to keep him there, fine.
Okay, then McMahon, Austin, and Willie. No?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm into that, but it doesn't even need to be Willie. I would love to split them up. Have Marner, Matthews, and
Nick
and
Robertson.
Nylander. Sure. I'm in. Honestly, I'm in. I think Austin Matthews is good enough to make this a three-line team, if you give him a chance.
Yeah.
Give him a chance. You're not into it.
Well, listen, let's go no further than watching Max and Mitch and Matthew Nyes tonight.
Yeah. Am I three steps ahead?
But, again, I like Max. Listen, you can put Max on the line, and if he can get 2 weeks, a month, 3 months, maybe he does crack that barrier that he has not been able to crack his whole career, and that's to legitimize himself on a contending team for a top six.
I got good news for you. But we have his coach on it.
He's a top nine guy.
For sure he is. Let's listen to clip four from Berube on Max in the top.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Max has been in this situation before here. I wasn't here, but I watched it, and you know, Max has been around a long time. He's a good player, and he's the type of player that relishes that type of thing. You know, he understands what's, you know, his job is tonight and what he needs to do, and he just goes out and executes.
I just think he's going to have a good night.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah. I think they all should have a good night based on the weekend and regrouping and getting a good night's rest.
What do you think
Craig Berube did in terms of watching previous Maple Leaf stuff to prepare to coach this roster? Like, he says, I wasn't here, but I watched it. What do you think he did? Like, this offseason, do you think he went back and watched 40 Leaf games?
Yeah.
100 or 80 Leafs games?
Enough to say, I want more north, south than east, west.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We have not seen a lot of regrouping. We've seen pucks in deep. We've seen one or two guys hard to the net. The stat that you mentioned the other day about second chances and rebound goals.
Yep. Pretty good in those categories.
That's right into Berube's kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the gist of, I think, what he's speaking of.
Well, I mean, if you watched a million games from the last couple of years or the last year with Domi, he would know what we all know. Good with good players, losing with bad players. So why... Oh, not bad players, but, you know, bottom six guys, you lose them. And, I mean, like,
he can't drive a line. He needs to be a part of something.
So, if you've watched him in the games and you know what his game is, like, why are you trying to steal these minutes with him as a third-line center? We know it doesn't work.
Just speaks to, I think, some of
death.
The issues they have.
Like or death.
Well, let's stick with the theme of the coach weighing in on some of these guys, middle six guys. Yeah, Berube on Bobby McMahon interests me there. Clip six.
Well, I mean, I think he... He's, you know, he got a couple goals and he was going good and it kind of dipped a bit. He needs to find it again. Like, you know, just I think sometimes players overthink things and try to do more than they need to do. Like, his game needs to be a simple up and down game and bang bodies, big body, and go to the net hard and things like that. So he can be better for sure.
He's all over McMahon, eh? Like, yeah.
Well,
Do you see why?
Yeah. I see why, because a mid-30 guy like Max Pacioretty's playing harder than you are.
Good comparison, yeah.
And I can't have that.
Yeah.
Like, that's a bad sign for us.
End of story.
Pacioretty should be a whipped cream and a cherry on top, man. You need to be the ice cream when it comes to hitting guys.
Yeah.
And he's not. But we've had this discussion before. It's okay. Everybody's on their best behavior when everybody's watching closely at training camp or a couple exhibition games or a couple seasons. But now we're in November, December, 4 games in 6 nights. Don't want to do it all the time. Then you're going to have a coach all over you. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, fair enough. Couple ways we can switch gears.
But I think, you know, he's trying to get this physical presence out of McMahon. And, you know, is he a physical, like, do you need goals out of him, or do you need some physical presence? Like,
there's a quote.
Well, how much did he get given? How much was his contract?
Is it 1.5 or something like that?
1.2, I think.
And we were all pretty excited about that contract because he was scoring so much last year. Find out. They need that version too. He's supposed to be looked upon as
1.35.
He's supposed to be looked upon as depth scoring, right?
Oh, like
they need the physicality of him.
He 15 and a half a season last year.
He was like ready for next level stuff.
Mm-hmm. And he's taken a step back.
But he's taken a step back. His coach is asking him to be something he's never been. So I get what Berube sees. There's a quote about McMahon, one of his Harvard teammates. I think he went to Harvard, didn't he?
One of
his Ivy teammates said, "I don't think he hit anyone in 4 years." Like, there's a quote about, you know, that was just not the guy he was. And I understand that you know all about adapting your game to make and stay in the NHL.
Yeah.
I think it is a little bit trying to change the player, which there's nothing wrong with that if he's willing to do it. But I think where they're at.
There's a pecking order. The hitting comes first before you start searching searching for goals. The hitting part is the easiest part to make your coach happy.
Yeah.
To appease him.
Yep.
It's not the goal scoring part. And now he's kind of gets caught when he's out on the ice.
For sure. It's actually, you know, like how a stay-at-home D-man, they say, like, if you notice him, it's a bad game. When you don't notice him, it's a good game. McMahon could kind of be the same thing, where if he just went about his business, forechecked, finished his check, played good positional, they'd play him all the time. And then he'd just find a few pucks here and there and shoot him in.
Which he can. We know that.
Oh, yeah. He can shoot him in.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't appear like he's all in on that engagement that Berube's needing right now. And he's a big, strong, heavy guy. We've seen him knock people over.
Yeah.
But do you think he'll get there? Like, do you think that, like, keeping, like,
this is a big question.
Yeah.
Well,
maybe we'll find that roommate.
Yeah.
What's that?
Was it a roommate? A teammate?
Yeah.
But maybe he'll have better insight than us.
I mean, continuing to ride him and talk about how he's been up and down and how he needs to hit people more and all this stuff. Sure, that's great. But you also really do need the other part of it on this team.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, you know, to me, you got to kind of have to find a balance between asking him to just be a bruiser and needing him to shoot the puck in the net. And that's why you're the coach of the Leafs and you get paid the big bucks, but you are losing the other part of his game right now.
Last year, he averaged 10.4 hits per 60 minutes, and this year it's 8.9. So he's down a hit and a half per 60 minutes of ice time.
That can't drop.
Yeah.
He can't let that drop.
And it has. You can see why there's some frustration from the coach. Year before, he's 10.36. So his hits are down. He needs more of that.
Okay. Where do you want to go?
Either Stolarz or Boston.
Stolarz. Thank you. Boo.
Oh, my God.
Boo.
Thank you.
This guy has been nothing but unbelievable, and Borny wants to run him to the backup. He's a backup.
Because we're going to sit here in April, and you guys are going to go, well, Stolarz is hurt, and now Wohl's had a bad year because he's only played 11 times. They should have given him some starts.
Why are you worrying about a conversation a month or 2 months or 3 months? Why? Just focus on 2 points tonight.
That Sheldon Keefe did that, and you hated it.
You are a mid-team until you are not a mid-team. Right now, they are in the middle of a pile with all the rest of them, and until you get some breathing room, don't start counting your.
All right. We
chickens.
Just remember this when we have conversations later in the year, and I say you guys were unwilling to look at the big picture. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, Stolarz starts. Listen, he's better than Wall right now. Gives him a better chance to win tonight. Tough to argue with that.
Okay, let's go to Berube on Stolarz starting tonight against the Boston Bruins.
Well, I mean, it's always discussions with the goalies and where we're at in the schedule and things like that. So we got a back-to-back coming up after tonight. I like Stoley's game last game, so I chose to go with him tonight.
That simple.
Yeah. It's like we have back-to-back. They're both going to play. Who do you want to get the extra game? The guy who's playing better. I get it.
That's the bottom line. So.
And that's the bottom line.
Yeah. You've been watching the Vince McMahon doc too, right?
I have
Yeah. Every time I hear that clip, I think of Stone Cold.
Not a great guy.
You want to... You're done with the Leafs? You want to talk a little Boston here?
Yeah.
On what Boston Bruin team will see tonight, because they've had their issues right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And are they a team that's coming in, turning a corner somewhat with two wins in a row, including two shutouts?
Or against the Kraken and the Flyers?
Or
those are good points.
Is this a team that... still going to find a way to lose without Austin Matthews in the lineup?
I don't know. Interesting Bruins team. Like, they had been built on D and goaltending and team theory stuff. They can't score. 26th in the NHL right now in goals for per game. Swayman's not been great. Kind of a slower start.
Yes, but I don't think he's a major concern right now.
Okay. So if he's okay, that would certainly help.
Okay. He's fine. If you want to look at the big picture, somehow, some way, it would have been nice if they could have avoided all of that. Did it need to happen? That for Boston to come to an 8.25, or Swayman coming down off of maybe a $9 million early demand? Like, did everything have to happen to get to that point, or could it have been avoided? Because it didn't help. The distraction did not help this team get out of the gate.
No, it's crazy how often you see that happen, where teams and players kind of go at each other for a contract, and then the player signs and struggles. It happened with both Nylander, I think Marner too, when he first signed his deal. Like, both guys were pretty slow out of the gates. It happens. I think there's something in your head about, like, almost being, I don't know if this is a big leap, but almost being, like, embarrassed about having publicly been seen grinding for more money, or whatever it is, seems to affect guys when they come back.
The other thing that's awfully strange is the challenge that Montgomery, their head coach, is giving two of their star players that you wouldn't necessarily consider issues when it comes to needing to set examples for the rest of the team. But he's butt heads with now his captain, Brad Marchand, and David Pastrnak.
Yeah. So Pastrnak was healthy scratch for the entire third period of the 2-0 win over the Seattle Kraken. Sounds like kind of a rough turnover in the second period, and that has been a trend with Pastrnak so far. My first thought on that, Kip, is like, you hear about coaches who feel like they're on the hot seat and it gets public, and they just say, if I'm going down, I'm going down, pushing all the buttons, pulling all the levers. Like, this, we're going down my way. I'm digging in.
Yeah. My first thought is, you don't have to speed up the process either.
You don't, but I can see guys being like, if we're going to lose a few games, I'm not doing it, continuing to cater to the guy who's turning the puck over all the time.
Oh, I know. But as Sammy has said on a few occasions, and you, with guys like Willie, there has to be a certain amount of acceptance. And my first thought is that, yes, he has turned over the puck in bad spots, but maybe more so than he has in the past. But do you really, over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, can you send a message without embarrassing him completely for the third period?
I don't know. You know, you and I think fundamentally disagree on this, like, ego stuff. I don't see it as like an embarrassing sort of thing. It's like that's punishment for not doing things. That's coaching. That's
I think it's just my experience from being around guys to know that like they are sucks and they are egos and there is all of the things that you're talking about that you're just way more mature. We're not. We're sucks. And you don't forget.
I mean, I played hockey until I was 28 professionally, too. Not in the NHL, mind you, but it's the same. You know, I've seen enough of these guys getting benched. I've been around with my dad and all his people. I've seen enough to know that these egos are massive.
Yeah.
But at some point, the crest on the front is supposed to be what comes first. And if you can't fall in line, sometimes you got to sit and watch.
But the coach will pay for it, not Pastrnak or Marchand.
Yeah, they have the contract.
I can assure you that it's like he's behind the scenes. I think there are rumblings that, you know, this can't go on much longer. And I don't know what a loss tonight or a bad loss could do for Montgomery.
Right.
Especially with Matthews out of the lineup here. But he's under the gun big time now, and he's just highlighted it that much more by going after a guy like Pastrnak in a game that they're winning.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying about he's made it a public issue now.
But,
like, and he's brought it to light.
And there's also the part of it where, you know, when I can't remember when Keefe did it here, when he benched Matthews and last year. Remember? There was like that, it was like half a, you know, half a period that he benched them for. They missed a power play after they had this really bad turnover and he was mad. And we talked about it for a few days. And you do it in these markets. It's benching Pastrnak in Boston is different than, you know, Macklin Celebrini getting benched in San Jose or somebody getting benched in a different market. Like, benching your best player by far in Boston in a game you're winning, that is sending a message. And that is something people are going to talk about. And you know people are going to talk about it. It's just you got to be careful with that, I think.
Pastrnak comes out, scores a hat trick. They win 5-3.
Right.
Montgomery looks like a hero.
And guess what?
First.
That's probably what's going to happen.
<There's>,
would you stop it?
No, like, I will. I mean, I don't know. We get to the game time later. Just, but go ahead.
You know, I just want to say that Montgomery has not fabricated this. Just sorting for giveaways in the NHL.
Oh.
He's second highest in the NHL in giveaways.
Who's number one?
So I gave you among forwards. Nathan MacKinnon is the highest. But Nathan MacKinnon plays 4 more minutes per game than him.
I mean, giveaways are often, the top of the league's often the best players.
Datsyuk every year, giveaway leader. He has the puck all the time. Yeah. Like, that was a thing. So certainly it's related to having the puck all the time. But there's a lot of giveaways there.
Yeah.
That's all. A couple per game.
This isn't the only
Dougie
place.
Dougie Hamilton first overall.
This is not the only place the Boston Bruins are leaking oil here because and of course, in about 10 minutes, we'll welcome in Andy Brickley, Boston Bruins analyst, and we'll get a little deeper into maybe some of their issues here. But that blue line, which we thought was going to be their rock, suddenly looks awfully slow.
Yeah.
And not even that tough. And they went out and got Zadorov.
Yeah. Which is, yeah. I mean, Carlo's big. I don't think of him as mean or anything like that. The one thing I do want to hear is Montgomery is trying to smooth this over publicly. Like, he's saying the right things to try to make it not a story. We have a great clip from Montgomery talking about Pastrnak and the benching and how he handled it.
Yeah, he was incredible. You know, very vocal, picking up players at the last 15 seconds, talking about what a great team win this is. I said this since the beginning. I've said it numerous times. I'm really lucky to work with the leaders I get to work with. I'm very fortunate. In other places, like, you've seen coaches that, you know, it's a big problem. And I'm lucky with the accountability that exists in this culture and the leaders that I get to deal with, because that allows me to hold everybody accountable.
In other places that I see, it's a big problem. Is that a little Leaf jab there that Sheldon tried to bench a couple guys and it was a big problem?
I don't think he was
going
down that path.
He wasn't in Toronto yet for that clip, so maybe not.
No.
But if he was here, I would believe it.
But he's already kind of trying to make amends, right?
Yeah.
So he's trying to get ahead of it.
That wasn't quite apologizing for benching them.
Nor should you.
But that was the whole Sheldon thing when he was like, he apologized for calling him soft or whatever happened. There was no apology there. But it is making amends.
I'm real interested to see the type of energy the Bruins come out tonight. And Pastrnak for sure.
Yeah.
Because the Boston Bruins that we've known or watched beat up on the Leafs over the years was this hard, hard forechecking team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the stats today will tell us that the Toronto Maple Leafs and Boston are fairly even, right?
And the standings are
6-5-2, 6-6-1.
Yeah, same team is.
Same in the standings, but like, Toronto's been out. Much better and harder forechecking team than what I've seen out of the Boston Bruins this year. That staple has been all but disappeared towards, you know, their average start is that they have not forechecked hard. No.
And I think you've hit on something that's key to watch. Like when I was on the staff with Sheldon with the Marlies, he would bench Willie, he would call Willie in and he would show him the video and he'd say, here's why do you disagree with being benched? I'm sure Montgomery and Pastrnak have had that talk, but if Pastrnak does disagree with him, like he's not one to, I think it has a chance to be a lingering problem for them if the leaders of the team feel like they're getting picked on. Yeah, I think tonight's effort's going to be telling from them.
Yeah, and it's also to me, in Montgomery's mind, like, I know this is a fan thing to say, but he knows that David Pastrnak owns the Leafs. He knows who the next game is against. He knows how good it's going to look when Pastrnak guaranteed goes
out. Now you're giving him credit for thinking ahead to Toronto pretty significantly.
Yeah, I am. For this, I am. Maybe not on that quote, but there's something to it. He knows he's going to go out there and play great against the Leafs. He always plays great against the Leafs, and therefore it's going to make him look awesome for benching him and lighting a fire under him and getting him going. Like, he'll be awesome tonight. He's Pastrnak. It's the Leafs. Yeah. So there you go.
No signs of Vancouver Zadorov.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of Colorado Zadorov, but not like he's struggling. There's a few others struggling. Lindholm doesn't look himself either.
Mm-hmm. Lindholm and Pastrnak just no chemistry, and they really banked on that being a line, eh?
Lindholm hasn't scored since October 12th, third game of the year.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we saw Charlie McAvoy score a pretty nifty goal.
Coyle,
Charlie Coyle. We saw him score a real nice goal, but you know, Lindholm and Charlie Coyle are going to take you to the promised land as number one and two down the middle.
No, I don't think that's a safe bet. You know, the Bruins kind of feel like they got some issues here. Like the tent pole guys are fading, and with Marchand fading, and you need a lot from Coyle, and those guys got to find it.
Tyler Johnson in the lineup tonight.
Doesn't feel like big bad Bruin stuff to me, I'll be honest. Let's
That's more Cubs stuff.
Yeah, do you want to hear Berube talk about on the Bruins here? Clip three, please.
Hasn't really changed. I mean, the personnel has changed with their team, but their culture and how they play the game and what they value in the game hasn't changed, you know. And they got solid goaltending, you know, obviously they got a big D core that defends well, and their forwards are responsible defensively. They don't give you much, so you got to earn what you get against them. And at the same time, you know, you got to make sure that we're not cheating and forcing too much and things like that. You got to play patient too against them. You know, that's going to be a key point tonight.
I mean, that's given them a lot of credit for being the same team they've been. They just don't look like it. Like if I sort their fancy numbers that I get from SportLogic, Boston's not good.
A lot of red.
Like they're 29th in shot attempts, 25th in shots on net, 29th in rush chances, 23rd in forecheck chances. So they don't create, you know, expected goals against 22nd. They don't look good.
We suck.
Except against the Leafs.
You think that's going to hold, eh?
Always does. They played great against the Leafs. They do. They've won 8 straight. Regular season games, and they can go back to playoffs.
Eight in the regular season?
It's 8 straight, bud.
That's a big number.
And so they played a few times right after Wohl came back last year.
And they lit him up.
He just was not ready for that challenge.
All right, let's take a break.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. When we return, we'll welcome in Andy Brickley does a great job covering the Boston Bruins. We'll get into some detail there on maybe he knows a little bit more on Pasternak.
Yes, and thanks to Brad on Twitter who pointed out that I lost my poppy. I don't know how it happened, but I'll get it.
We'll look after you, pal. All that and more after the break.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. Are we back?
Are we?
Hopefully.
All right. Well, you can let me know when the commercial's coming to an end.
Sometimes our in the break chats, well, they would do really, really popular. Popular.
We should have a
yes.
podcast.
You know? For our last show ever together, they'd be wonderful.
Hey, before we get to Andy Brickley, before I forget, last night, the Zigzags, my beloved beer league team, we had a listener out to play net for us. Cameron, our listener. And he was spectacular, made a couple great saves. We got a big win over the Jaeger Bombs or Jaegermeisters. I forget the team name. But shout out Cameron. He was awesome. So thanks for coming out, bud. Appreciate it.
Way to go, Cameron.
Thanks. Thanks for letting me get that in. I appreciate it. Like, it's getting goalies is hard. I was thinking about paying
I'm
money.
I'm okay with that. Thank I'm all right you. With Thank that. You. Okay. Proud moment. It's not like a hole in one.
No.
Right?
Oh, yeah. That's a good segue.
Let's go to Andy Brickley, who canceled our last hit. Due to a hole-in-one. I've been in broadcasting well over 20 years, Andy. That one was a first for me, but I get it. Trust me, I get it, pal. You still telling that story every day?
Let's make sure the wording is correct. I didn't cancel. I called your producer to say things have escalated.
Oh, we canceled on you.
Well, I think it was a mutual decision just for those that listened to the show that they didn't really need to hear that.
Okay, can you remind us the yardage and the iron used on your hole-in-one?
Yeah, if memory serves me correctly, it was a Friday, and we have a big Friday group that plays together. You know, we have the team from 11 to 12:30, and the season was winding down. There was a lot of money on the table, and it was on the 15th hole, 190 yards, and I hit a three hybrid.
Wow!
And it landed on the front of the green and rolled in like a putt. It was nice to watch.
Congratulations!
That's awesome.
Thanks.
Where does that luck stop when it comes to the Boston Bruins?
They were pretty lucky over the weekend. They played well. They got some improved play from some guys that they needed some better play from that play a lot of minutes for this team and have a lot of responsibility, a lot of accountability, and they hadn't found their A game yet. So improvements there, those are good signs. They got good goaltending. They got better penalty killing. So there's some things to get excited about for this team. But they certainly weren't flawless performances. There's still a lot of growth in their game. A lot of it has to do with the way the Bruins play, guys, and you know this. It's a hybrid, particularly on the defensive side of the game, and they rely on their centers to do a lot of the work. And I know that's a little old school, but, you know, they're not man-on-man. They're not zone. So a lot of it is on the centerman to make the right reads and then communication. And they got three new centers, and it's taken them a while to get really comfortable with how they defend, and I think that's been one of their bigger problems. So to put a couple of shutouts back-to-back, that puts them in a bit of frame of mind coming in to play the Leafs tonight.
I'm scared to ask you where you
He's
are
in a
right
Chuck
now.
E. Cheese.
I'm at the Scotiabank Arena, and they're doing the sound check, and I'm up in the booth. I thought this would be the quietest place to do the interview.
Cheers.
It's all good.
Sammy,
I'm wrong again. I'm wrong again.
Sammy guessed Chuck E. Cheese.
It's all good. It's all good. We appreciate you taking the time even from there. The question I got for you is just, it feels like the Bruins, like the season is not where the Bruins would want it to be. They're kind of right where the Leafs are in the standings, but for some reason, it just feels like it's been a lot worse for the Bruins. Why does it feel that way? Do we just have the wrong picture of how the start of the season has gone there?
I think it's more because of certain individual play. You know, you have a guy like Sally McAvoy who should really control games at times. I think he's that good. He's that skilled. He wants the puck on his stick. He wants to be on the ice in critical situations. But he had doubt that has crept into his game, and it's hard to believe somebody that good, that's that important, that's going to play 25 minutes, that he has some doubt. I thought the last game that he played against Seattle was his most decisive. He made the right decisions. He fought the game quick. He played quick, and it was the best he's played. Charlie Coyle, another guy. You know, last year there's some question, can he drive an offense as a second-line center on an elite team? And everybody felt that he was a great third-line center and a Stanley Cup contender, but could he do, you know, in the absence of Bergeron and Krejci, could he be a second-line center? And he had a really good year, and he did drive the offense for a second line. That wasn't happening for the first 10 games. He didn't have his A game, and he's been very good the last two. Hampus Lindholm, another guy that plays big minutes on the back end. You know, you have that 1-2 punch with McAvoy in one twosome and then Lindholm in a second, and his game has improved over the last two or three, which they've needed. I think the guys that came over, the big free agent signings, and Lindholm and Zadorov, it took them a while to figure out where they best fit in, how to play, especially Lindholm with that center position that I already brought up. They had him on a bumper on the power play. He's probably better served on the elbow, so they've tried to reconfigure what they do with the man advantage to get more out of that in terms of scoring. David Pastrnak's been, you know, Jekyll and Hyde. He's been awesome at moments and you know, invisible at others, and then, you know, bad turnovers at even other points, and obviously didn't get a shift in the third period the other night in the game against the Kraken. So there's been issues. You know, the holdout during training camp for Swayman, you know, was he going to be ready to go come game one? I think his game has improved. You know, he's always confident, always good, but now he's starting to look like that force that he can be in the net, and Korpisalo's been good too. They were great on the weekend. So there was so much surrounding this team that were question marks, and then a lot has been made of the situation with the head coach without a contract beyond this year, and then he had an exchange that was pretty public with Marchand and the benching of Pastrnak. So there's some issues that they're trying to sort out. I don't think they're big issues, and I think it's more on the player to respond the right way. Marchand certainly did, and I expect Pastrnak to do the same. So those are some of the things that have prevented Boston. You know, you knew they weren't going to be 9-0-1 in the first 10 like they were a year ago, but you really didn't expect this one step forward, two steps back, which is what we've got for the first 10, 11, 12 games.
We're talking to Andy Brickley, Boston Bruins analyst. Does a terrific job covering the Bruins for Nesson. So part of that frustration of a poor start has led to very high-profile benchings by head coach Jim Montgomery. And Andy, I mean, we played, we've seen guys benched before, but eyebrows are always raised when a coach goes after his best players. So you tell me, how calculated of a risk is this for Montgomery to go right at a guy like Pastrnak most recently?
Yeah, working backwards, let's start with Pastrnak. This was not based on solely the performance of the second period in the game against Seattle. This was coming. This was building. This was time and time again trying to get David to play the right way in critical situations, games where they left points on the board, and he was a culprit in many of those bad decisions. I mean, he wasn't alone, but when you have a high-profile guy, a guy that's going to play a lot, a guy that's supposed to make the plays, he's now really more of the leadership group. You know, Marchand needs some help in that room. And when you have a guy like McAvoy who's doubting himself and Pastrnak who's turning the puck over and making bad line changes, that's unacceptable for a head coach. It's unacceptable as a teammate. It should be unacceptable. You know, and you'd like that room to police itself, but it's different now. It's no more Chara. It's no more Bergeron. A lot is on Marchand. And Marchand was trying to find his own game at ice level because of the three surgeries in the offseason. Didn't really have much of a training camp. So as he was trying to find his legs and his game, and he's trying to be a voice, and he's trying to run the locker room. And then you have a couple of other guys that are supposed to be leaders, and they're the ones that are the guilty parties or taking the shortcuts. That's unacceptable for a head coach. And, yeah, it is a slippery slope to say, you know, how do I go about this to get my team's attention? And, again, I thought Marchand handled it perfectly with that exchange on the bench. And then I will wait and watch very carefully tonight how David Pastrnak responds to being benched in the third period.
So it feels like, could this be the first year in a while where for the Bruins, they're really looking at adding or making changes within the season? Do you think that this is the year where maybe we could see some trades or them getting perhaps a little bit more aggressive than the past?
Yeah, I think that's pretty insightful of you. I think you're going to see a hockey trade this year. You know, I thought we were going to get a really big hockey trade when they were going to trade Nina Solmark. You know, the goaltending tandem that was so good for the Bruins and the relationship between the goalies, but they knew they had to deal one of them with the situation financially where Swayman was headed after having the arbitration the year before. And they knew they were going to be in a battle and just try to fight the common ground financially. My impression was that they valued being in the draft this past summer in the first round. They had to deal with Ullmark and his limited movement clause. But they wanted to get in the draft, so the timing of the trade was such that it allowed them to get into the draft. What, 25th pick? I guess they put some value on that. They get the Korpisalo, and they get the Korpisalo contract, or most of it. And then Kastelic's been a great find. He's been a nice addition as far as the fourth-line construction for the Bruins. That said, I was looking more for, you know, from my generation as a fan of the Boston Bruins growing up in Boston, I was looking for that Esposito-Rattel kind of trade, you know, Rattel and Park. You know, a big hockey trade, you know, a really good player for a really good player, a need for a need. But that hasn't surfaced yet, but it would not surprise me, fellas, to see that happen at some point this year.
Okay, I promise I'll let you go, but you know, Pasternak's their game breaker. We know that. World class in his prime. Marchand, maybe slowing down a tad, but what is it that they need most? Is it a dynamic score here, a number one centerman to maybe push Lindholm and coil back? What is it in your eyes?
Well, it's a top six forward, no question about it. Whether it's a wing or a center, my preference would be a center. I think you could even put Coyle on the wing if you wanted to have him inside the top six. But if it had to be a winger, it has to be a top six guy, a guy that can produce, a guy that can play power play, a guy that even if he's a wing can help drive an offensive line. But my preference would be a center. Now, you know, if you keep Coyle at the number two slot, what is Matty Patra going to be? What is he going to be? You know, this is a draft kid. They're trying to put resources behind him in terms of development and maybe that had something to do with the signing of Tyler Johnson to get him on a line with Patra, to give him some help, somebody that can play intelligent, give and goes, help the kid learn the game, learn to know where the hits are coming from. So there's a lot of moving parts, but my simple answer is top six forward that can be productive. I think that's what they need most.
Last one for me, Beecher, Kastelic, Koepke. Is it Koepke? Am I saying that right? Have they been on for any goals against yet? That line's been unbelievable for the Bruins.
Well, it was funny when they went into Carolina, which was a disaster. You know, Monty tried to split that lineup and put one of each on a different line to hope that their work ethic and their habits, their good habits, would work, you know, would rub off on the other two players on that line. That was a disaster. Did not work. That was not, ended up not being a good idea. So we put them back together. They're comfortable playing with each other. They play the game the right way. At least to this point, they've been good. Their sustainability's been good. They keep it simple, high percentage. They know who they are. Their back check pressure is real good. They take the body. All the stuff that you're looking for when you put a fourth line together, they can start periods, they can close games out, hopefully. Beach is pretty good in the faceoff circle. Kastelic's been good in the faceoff circle. And you can get them out there to change momentum of games. They've been very good. The best idea is to keep the three of them together. As far as goals against, yeah, very few, if any. That's because they've been playing the right way.
And yeah, I don't know what the hell's going on at the Scotiabank Arena, but I thought Halloween was over. I hear chains in the background. I hear ghosts moving in and out. Steps.
My assumption was they did their sound check around 2:30. Not right now, you know, when you're trying to get ready for the game. But, you know, what do I know? I'm just a guy from Boston who's, you know, I keep looking at my phone wondering how the election's going back there.
Good luck to you.
Yeah, no one can ever take that hole-in-one away from you, that's for sure. Thanks for doing this, Andy.
Well, that is number four, by the way.
Oh, my gosh.
Boo! Share
yeah,
them.
You got that excited for a fourth one?
I had to get that in, though. I got to brag a little bit.
Yeah, justify.
Most definitely.
Well done.
All right, Andy Brickley, everybody. The Boston
right,
Bruins take on the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Sammy was loving the
like, what did you hear? I heard chains.
Okay.
Dragging.
One of the first, like, I used to be, when I first started producing, I remember I booked a guy, I forget the guy's name, he used to be a writer for Sportsnet, and I booked him on with Jeff Salmon, who I used to produce for back in the day. And I was happy to get this guy on, and like in the middle of the interview, like it sounded like he was in the background, like there's some sound in the background. And then somebody like scores a goal at a rink, and it's like eruption, rock, rock. It's like goal scored. He was just like doing the interview, but like in a hockey game. And I just remember laughing so hard. It's just, I don't know how good of a pro Andy Brickley is. Like, I guess I have extreme ADD, but he did like those massive sounds. He didn't break. He didn't stop.
What choice do you have?
I guess, but what a pro.
Some things we just cannot control. So you just,
yeah, I know. Sorry about that.
Send me the serenity.
Listen, we
stay calm and carry on.
At least he picked up, you know?
He did.
How about a shout out for Justin Brizzo? Like,
is this just you taking a dig at Leafs?
No, it's not. Yes. Yeah, it is. But it's a guy that came within one goal of breaking my North Bay junior record.
Yeah. And he is a giant, right? He's 6'5", 220 pounds. He played for the Toronto Marlies for 20 games a couple years ago, scored four times.
And now he's a pretty important piece in that lineup.
Great hands. Four goals in 11 games for them. Yeah.
So how does a guy like that just...
Oh, here it is.
How does that happen?
But this happens when they're not ready. You know, like...
Well, it just seems that it happens a little bit more often, maybe here.
Are you saying the Leafs had Carter Verhaeghe and what's his name, Rodriguez in Florida, and
Marchment
in Dallas, and we can do it for a while.
But I think
it's enough to piss you off.
It's
though.
Just annoying.
But if you went, like, listen, I am as pissed off about all those guys as anyone.
You.
But I think if you went around the league to every single team and did that, you would have a laundry list of guys.
Rodriguez played for.
I get
teams.
It.
Right? And, I mean, Carter Verhaeghe was not only cut by the Leafs.
No clue.
He was cut by the Lightning.
Nobody saw
that. There was two teams that went out,
right?
Gave up.
It was just impossible to have seen that.
Still sucks.
Like, if I
could undo Marchment for Dennis Malgin, I probably would.
Do you think Nick Robertson knows that list pretty well? And going, I'd like to join it.
Yeah.
I would love to be part of that list.
Go be one of those guys, for sure.
For sure. But, man,
Marchment.
You got a good feeling about tonight?
I do. Yeah, this is the sort of situation in the past where the Leafs have said, we're without Matthews, we're without Marner, we're without Riley. Their record is good without all their star players. So everyone rises up.
Yeah.
And it's just a year where the Boston Bruins are going to finally kind of fall off, because we've been waiting for a while now.
I do think that they're in trouble. Like, that Poitras... I don't think he's all that great. You know, they're not that great down the middle. Marchand is not the guy he was. It's funny. You know, the biggest thing that I took away from that interview was when he said, it's not like it used to be. You don't have, not the horns.
Oh, okay.
It's not the same culture where you have Bergeron, you have Chara. It's not like that anymore. He was basically saying the coach has to do this now. Marchand's trying to find his game. That, to me, is like, that is what the Bruins were, was the identity, the culture, the leadership. And if he's saying they're not that anymore.
Why can't Marchand set that? He's part of that. I get
trying.
It. The numbers aren't quite where he wants them, but he still should be able to carry that part of the culture into that dressing room every day.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you lose a little piece of the team and a little piece, and the culture holds you together, and then eventually, you know, you just lose too many bits of it. He's the only guy, right, who you would consider a part of that, I guess, McAvoy?
God, this is music to my ears, boys. Like Abbey Road, just playing in my ears, talking about the Bruins' downfall. I still don't think.
You don't believe it?
Yeah, like, you can show me their... what's the page you use? Sports Logic. Mm-hmm. You can show me all the red you want. Still wearing black and gold. I do find a way that there is enough culture there. There is enough good players there that they're not going to like miss the playoffs.
The nerds hate like Ottawa more than Boston.
Listen,
for sure.
That's where, again, Detroit at 5-5-1. They're all right in the mix here.
The Athletic has the Red Wings odds of making the playoffs at 5%.
Already.
Yeah.
The Boston Bruins?
No, the Red Wings.
Oh, Red Wings, yeah. That tracks.
If 82 game
very
season.
Very small chance.
and we've concluded this after 11 games.
I mean, if you've watched him play, I would be like, I agree. Agree.
Our thanks to Andy Brickley, who will cover the game for the Boston Bruins tonight. Coming up next, Steve Alakat. Tuesdays are getting quite popular on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show.
Big show today. Big show.
Huge one, as we'll dive into a ton with one of the best ones out there when it comes to his clear sight analytics. Steve Alakat after the break. Don't go away.